I'm Todd Hatton, and I am joined in the studio this morning by Jordan Robbins and her faculty mentor, Dr. Terry Durding. And you were recently in Frankfurt. Please tell us why.
I was presenting research on white nose syndrome in bats.
Mm-hmm. This was for the posters at the Capitol event in Frankfurt, correct?
Correct.
And so how did your research get selected for that?
Well, white nose syndrome is a big problem, and I took the internship with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, mm-hmm. catching bats all summer at LBL.
Which sounds like it's a job.
Yeah, yes.
Well, that leads me to wonder, how difficult is a bat to capture?
Well, they're pretty difficult, but we put big nets over creeks and corridors mm-hmm. to catch bats passing through.
And this caught caught the attention of the state because of the seriousness of the problem?
Yeah, the white nose syndrome causes bats to wake up during hibernation and use up all their fat reserves and starve to death.
Mm. And how important is the bat to the ecological system?
It's important for agriculture because they eat all the crop pests, and that reduces crop damage and pesticide use.
Well, do they go even further than that with mosquitoes or anything like that?
Yeah, they eat a lot of the pests, and they're good pollinators for many plants.
Really? Mm-hmm. A bat is a pollinator. Now, that you're going to have to explain to me. How does a bat pollinate? She's looking at you, Dr. Durding.
Yeah, she's looking at me. Well, not so much our temperate zone bats, but in the more southern areas and in the tropical areas, they fly to a flower, and it's usually your white flowers that are more visible at night, although they're using radar. Some also use other cues, and when they stick their head in the flower, they get pollen on it, and then when they go to the next flower, they pollinate.
So much
that flower, just like hummingbirds,
right.
for example,
okay.
would be similar. But in the pest aspect of it in our area, the estimate a couple years ago, so several million dead bats ago, the estimate was about $30 billion worth of pest control per year.
Wow.
So with all the bats that have been lost, it is actually a huge economic impact.
Well, I'll throw this question open to both of you. I was aware that white nose syndrome was a problem in the Mammoth Cave system. I had even heard that it was a problem in the cave system that was up near Adams, Tennessee, which is not that far from here. How pronounced of a problem is it in the land between the lakes?
well, we have caught a lot of less Myotis species, which are being impacted by white nose syndrome. And the non-susceptible species that aren't really exposed to it, they stayed about the same, but the ones that are susceptible to white nose syndrome declined a lot post the spread of white nose syndrome in LBL.
There's one species that has always been caught. It's very common, and common across the United States. And for the first time ever in LBL's surveying history, that species was not caught. So we're assuming it's been exterminated in this area. And there was another one that's one of the most abundant ones, and she caught one individual.
Really? So are we seeing a difference in the species of bat that's in the area?
Yeah, we're seeing a lot more eastern red bats and evening bats, which aren't susceptible to white nose syndrome. And a lot of the other ones we haven't caught a lot.
So we're seeing natural selection in action where one species of bat is coming in as one comes out. Well, how is that affecting this ecological balance? I mean, is the species of the bat going to play a role in that pest control or pollination that goes on around here thanks to the bat population?
That is an excellent question. And you're right on the cutting edge of where research is at. Right now, the money is going into what can we do about white nose syndrome? Is there anything we can do to help bats, to slow its spread? The next question is exactly what you said. What is the impact on the bat communities? How is this going to influence insect populations in the area? Are the non-susceptible ones going to step in and sort of take over that ecological role? Or are we going to see a real shift in how bat communities interact with the environment?
It's remarkable considering that the bat is very often seen as a pest itself, something that flies around your attic and gets in your hair and so on and so forth. And I'm really quite surprised to see that the bat has such a broad ecological impact. I didn't know about pollination. Now, I interrupted you earlier, Jordan. You were talking about what white-nose syndrome does to the bat itself. It wakes up during earlier than it should in its hibernation cycle, yep. And that has, and burns up the fat. So basically, the bat ends up starving to death?
Right, yeah. It's caused by a fungus that grows on their skin, and it acts as an irritant and makes them wake up early and use up all their fat.
Well, are there any current hypotheses about what's causing this?
What's causing white-nose syndrome?
Right.
It originated, we think, from someone coming. We believe it has spread through the bats in Europe. Europe doesn't have any big bat colonies with hundreds of thousands of bats like the United States does. Mm. North America does. The thought is that a fungus went through many, many years ago in Europe and is still there, but the bats that are left are resistant, and that it was carried over here and into a cave in New York, which is where the white nose started, and that started the whole series of transmissions that's spreading across the United States.
How does this spread through the bat population?
When they come in contact with each other, it can spread, and by people bringing it into caves on their feet, and just there's a lot of ways it can spread to bats.
So there seems to be a lot of different vectors, which is making finding the cause and the treatment, it sounds like, very difficult. Is there anything that's being done that's working?
They found an antifungal that they use on bananas in the supermarket to reduce mold, right. And that's found to work on bats, but they're afraid to put it into caves because they don't know how it will affect other organisms in the cave.
And then there's having to put lotion on a bat. I mean, it sounds like it's going to be a lot more hard work.
Yeah.
Well, is there anything, because I mean, I know that places like Mammoth Cave are very large tourist destinations. Is the National Park Service putting any protocols in effect? I mean, are they shutting off areas of the cave? I mean, are you having to change your shoes before you go in? What are they doing? Do you know?
They have a protocol, and they put this in quite a few years ago. They're trying to educate the people because there's so many that come through Mammoth Cave,
right.
Educating them about white nose syndrome. And they walk through a disinfectant so that the shoes are cleaned off before going into the cave, and then when they leave the cave. So they're trying to avoid introduction of the fungus into the cave along with an education program.
That sounds like it's just putting the right kind of welcome mat out.
Yes, exactly.
It's helping out a
yeah.
lot. And it seems like such a small thing. Is that helping with the impact of this syndrome on the bat population?
Well, potentially, but you've still got the bats transmitting it to each other. And they live in colonies.
Mm.
So because of that, it's pretty clear if you watch the movement of the disease across North America since 2007, the bats are carrying it along their migration routes, and so we can't stop the bat
right.
transmission.
Now see, that I was not aware of either, that the bats migrate.
Mm-hmm.
So are we in one of those flight paths?
Mm-hmm. Yes, we are.
And how significant, I mean, how big of a flight path is it?
We don't have an answer to that now, but we will, because one of the new ways of studying bats now is using airplanes. They radio tag the bat, have a number of bats. Like in the near future, in the next month, there will be 50 or 60 of an endangered species of bat in Tennessee that are tagged, and then they will have airplanes flying to see where those tagged bats go.
Right.
So it's real exciting right now that we have this technology and are able to still tag bats and see where are these migratory routes. We mentioned baseline information. We don't have a baseline information we need, but
right.
we're getting there with technology.
It's really remarkable, I think, that here in the 21st century, we're finding out so much more about the bat. It's unfortunate that it takes something like white-nose syndrome to really kickstart that research. Well, let me ask you, Jordan, now that this is quite an achievement, getting out in front of state legislators like this. What's next? I mean, are you going to continue a career in biology? What's your plans?
Yeah, I plan to become a wildlife biologist and then go to graduate school. And during this next year, I'm planning to do like field work and get more experience before I go back.
It sounds like you've had a pretty good start, actually.
Yes.
Well, and so what part has all of your classwork played in this research? I mean, how have you been pulled in the different disciplines within the science community here?
Yeah, like wildlife techniques. We learned a lot about catching bats and birds, and so that played a role. And dendrology, because I conducted habitat assessments. So.
And dendrology is the study of trees.
Right.
Okay.
And botany.
And botany. Okay.
Yeah. So those helped.
GIS.
Yeah, GIS. Mm-hmm.
For geosciences.
Right, which is
critical.
Mapping, basically. Mm-hmm. Okay. It sounds like you had a lot going. How did this impact? Well, I guess the question is, did you have much of a social life while this was going on? Because it sounds like this was a very involved process.
Yeah, not at all.
Well, okay. That's understandable, but it seems to very certainly have paid off. And we do appreciate you coming up to talk about it. My last question is pretty much those of us that are who enjoy going to Mammoth Cave or places like this, going out into the woods. What do we do to help?
You can support local organizations, for example, supporting Land Between the Lakes and their ecological programs. Same thing at Mammoth Cave, supporting efforts to try and maintain natural resources. In Kentucky, that's a huge part of what I think Kentucky is about. Mm-hmm. Residents in Kentucky care about their natural resources. So any efforts you can make to support those, supporting your fish and wildlife departments, your conservation funds, that will all help with what's left of bat populations and future bat populations.
Oh, my last question. Jordan, when you talk to your friends about this, what kind of reactions are you getting from them? Are they, I did not know that, what can I do to help? What are they saying to you now?
They just think I'm crazy for catching bats. They had no idea what white-nose syndrome was.
Right.
Or anything.
And now they know how important it is, probably in great detail.
Right, yeah.
Well, Jordan Robbins, thank you for coming up. And Dr. Terry Dirting, thank you as well for coming up and talking to us about this not insignificant problem here in Kentucky and what we can do about it. Appreciate you coming up.
You're welcome.
Thank you.